Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. My name is Kathleen Sabo. Recent revelations have laid bare government programs and actions for monitoring citizen communication. Polls show that more than half of those Americans polled disapprove of the newly revealed level of government surveillance of telephone calls and internet and email activity. Today we'll be looking at issues that concern New Mexicans, but that are not unique to our state, as we explore what privacy looks like these days and how our concept of privacy is changing. Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues are the Executive Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, of New Mexico, Peter Simonson, and Rick Anglada, former Taos, New Mexico Police Chief and New Mexico State Police Lieutenant. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining us later by phone will be New Mexico State Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino, the sponsor of anti-surveillance legislation during the most recent state legislative session. If you would like to join in our discussion today, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call-In Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Peter Simonson, I don't want to presume that everyone knows the mission of the ACLU. Could you briefly and generally tell us what the American Civil Liberties Union's mission is?
Sure, it's pretty basic. The mission is to protect and defend and advance our civil liberties under the U.S. Constitution and even here in New Mexico under the New Mexico State Constitution.
So one of the key issues listed on the ACLU's website is privacy. Mm-hmm. How does the ACLU define privacy?
Well, for us, it really harkens to those constitutional liberties that are outlined in the Bill of Rights, most specifically probably the Fourth Amendment, which gives us a protection against unwarranted searches and seizures. And the courts have interpreted that provision, amendment, to mean to entail a variety of things. Most specifically, again, that it's if law enforcement, if the government is going to search your property, search your body, that it has a warrant to do so, that it has that warrant has received some sort of judicial review, that there is a particularized suspicion that you individually have committed a particular crime, not that the government will broadly search for information and see what comes up in a sort of a fishing expedition, and that you're given notice that the government is actually searching your property or is tapping your phone calls or what have you. So those, I think, are the principal components to privacy as far as we're concerned.
Okay. And Rick Anglada, you were in law enforcement for many years. You're a graduate of the FBI National Academy. Given your experience and training, how do you define privacy?
I tend to agree with Peter. I'm a firm believer in our Bill of Rights and the Fourth Amendment protections. We do have reasonable expectations of privacy in our homes, in our vehicles, in our lives. So I believe, and I've always tried to practice that in my police work and when I led the Taos Police, that we have to abide and honor that Bill of Rights.
You know, just to give the text of the Fourth Amendment, it's basic, simple, although interpreted in many ways, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about the Fourth Amendment. Now, recent revelations have brought to light extensive government collection of telephone and internet data from private citizens through the National Security Agency's, or NSA's, PRISM program and other programs. And yet, whistleblowers have told us for years, at least since 2005, that the NSA data mining and collection was happening. Peter, is there something new about these recent revelations, or have we just reached a tipping point?
I think that what is coming out now is beginning to give credibility to many of the suspicions that congressional leaders, that civil rights organizations have had for a long time, and that is that the federal government is very expansively interpreting some of the powers that were granted to it under the USA Patriot Act, that it gives it more authority than even Congress originally intended. Indeed, even congressional leaders who wrote, who drafted, and helped pass the USA Patriot Act had intended when that legislation went through. And that those powers are being used in ways that affect not just legitimate criminal and terrorist investigations, but they are impacting, they are implicating the breadth of American society. Indeed, that the government is now collecting information in a way that any innocent American could run afoul of an investigation, even if their activity is perfectly innocent.
Well, you know, and we talked about this. We mentioned this just a little bit. If I'm not doing anything wrong, then why do I care?
Well, I think, you know, there are a number of different responses to that, metaphorical and factual. Factually speaking, I think we have a history in this country of seeing that when power is unchecked, as these Patriot Act powers actually are, and we can talk about the particular power that's implicated by these latest revelations, that inevitably unchecked power is abused. And we have a lot of examples of that already with the USA Patriot Act. In the mid-2000s, there were a number of reports from the FBI's Inspector General's office showing, indeed, that one of the provisions of the Patriot Act, the National Security Letter provision, very similar to the provision being used right now, was being vastly overused, was being used in circumstances where it was not intended to apply. Literally tens of thousands of these national security letters were being applied every year since that provision was passed in the USA Patriot Act. I also like to say, you know, if you truly believe that your private information is not going to reveal anything suspicious about you and you're open to having the government scan that information at its leisure, when you arrive at your home at night and you're settling into your living room to pass the night with your family, why not throw the curtains wide open and let the public pass by and watch what you're doing in that context? Why not publish your credit card account statements, your bank statements online? Let others judge whether what you're doing is worthy of further scrutiny. I think if you're faced with that kind of exposure of your personal privacy and it gives you discomfort, you should be equally discomforted by the fact that the government is now looking at your telephone records.
You know, in prepping for the show, I came across the name of a program I'd forgotten about, but I know that gave us pause back in 2002. John Poindexter proposed the Total Information Awareness Program. And just to continue this, how is that different from what the NSA is doing now? And did we just feel differently because it was a publicly proposed program?
I think there are a couple of things. One, we didn't entirely know what the Total Information Awareness Program was intended to do. We suspected that it was a very elaborate data mining scheme, and that's indeed probably what it was. That program was also to be funded through the Defense Department, and so there were concerns that there was overlapping activity between domestic surveillance and extranational defense military activity. But at the end of the day, the revelations that we've recently heard, particularly about this prison program, which I'm sure we'll discuss, are very similar to the programs that were at the point of controversy at that point in time. So I think we're facing a very similar situation here, and it appears that the federal government has disregarded the concerns that the public aired when the Total Information Awareness Act was revealed and has gone ahead and has developed those powers for itself nonetheless.
Rick, how does local law enforcement deal with these issues, gathering information? Do they rely on some of this information? Does it filter down to the local authorities?
It does filter down somewhat. Many of the larger agencies work jointly in joint terrorism task forces with the federal government, with FBI and other agencies. When I was with the Taos Police, I began a Facebook page to have an open dialogue with the community. But I also warned on a documentary with Lester Holt that if you don't want Big Brother knowing what you're doing, don't put it on Facebook. Don't put it out there on the internet where it's available, because they will tend to look at it. As far as what we used it for was, we did use it in investigations, but it was what people had available open to the public. It wasn't, prying into their personal inboxes or things like that. But, I do have grave concerns over the government overreach as well.
We go back to that phrase, reasonable expectation of privacy.
Right.
And again, in prepping for the show, there was some talk about how our laws are so outdated. They deal with, snail mail. And how do you apply if your email isn't opened? Is it still private? But if you open it, is it then public? I mean, there are many laws that need to be updated. Isn't that correct, Peter Simonson?
There are laws that need to be updated. I think there are laws that need to be amended, in our opinion, based on these latest revelations. And beyond that, I think also, some of this is determined by case law and how the courts interpret particular sets of facts when they come before it that govern that define the boundaries of a reasonable expectation of privacy. And I think one of the things that has proved to be a barrier in this particular context where national surveillance is concerned is that for us to be able to actually bring litigation that would challenge the use of certain of these powers, for example, Section 215, which is the section of the USA Patriot Act that's at controversy here, that litigation requires the revelation of information that the government has consistently claimed is classified and not available to the public, even for the purposes of civil rights litigation. And the federal courts have tended to agree. And what that's meant is that the ACLU and its various attempts to challenge, in particular, the Section 215 provision, has been turned back by the federal courts because they have agreed with the government that if you can't show that you've been harmed, and you can only show that you've been harmed by revealing what the government claims is classified information, then you have no lawsuit. And that's a catch-22 that so far has proven to be insurmountable. Now the ACLU has filed another challenge to this NSA activity, claiming that we do have evidence to show, because the government has admitted that it has collected phone calls through Verizon. As it turns out, the ACLU is a Verizon user, and so is a plaintiff in its own lawsuit against the federal government. And these revelations serve as evidence that they've been affected.
And that's the PRISM program that you're mentioning?
No, this is the revelation that was released in the Guardian news article that the FBI had served upon Verizon one of these Section 215 orders, wherein it in fact is currently now collecting all transactional data, that is all metadata about phone communications that pass through that Verizon facilitates. That means that all of the phone numbers that the ACLU calls out of its central offices are collected and at some point screened by the federal government. You can imagine that our organization carries out quite a bit of litigation. So that means that the potential witnesses, the plaintiffs that we are calling, cases that have not yet been filed but that might be, could be revealed through screening that kind of information. There's any number of different ways that metadata can be used to harm not just agencies like ourselves, but the private citizen.
So if someone from the federal government comes out and says, we're not using it, does that satisfy the ACLU?
I mean, should it satisfy the American public when we've heard over and over again that the government is overusing these powers, that it believes that it has powers that are greater than what we're allotted to it by Congress? Given the history of our own country and the way these kinds of surveillance authorities have been abused, I don't think that we should stand for that kind of an assurance. I think we need proof. I think we need absolute transparency about how these laws are being used.
You know, I want to read a quotation from President Obama from an early June press conference. He said, "I think it's important to recognize you can't have 100% security and also 100% privacy and also zero inconvenience. We're going to have to make some choices as a society." Yeah, and I do want to just remind people we're in the studio today talking about privacy issues, and joining me are Rick Anglada, former Taos, New Mexico police chief and New Mexico State Police Lieutenant, and Peter Simon, the executive director of the ACLU of New Mexico. If you would like to join in our discussion today, you can email comments to us at KUNM.org. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. We'd love to hear from you. Are you willing to trade your privacy for security? How much privacy are you willing to give up? We're going to go to a quick break and we'll be back with you shortly.
This Friday, June 21st, tune in to KUNM 89.9. Turn on the radio, turn up the volume, because Youth Media Project has got something to say. Growth and personal development. Join us as we explore topics from spirituality to tattoos. Audio Revolution, June 21st, 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Native communities are working to protect sacred places from threats like environmental damage and new development. In our second installment on sacred places, we want to know what makes a place sacred, and do you know a sacred place that's in danger? Join us for the latest Sacred Places update on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show, where we're talking about privacy issues. We're joined by Peter Simonson of the ACLU of New Mexico and Rick Anglada, the former Taos police chief and New Mexico State Police lieutenant. And Peter, I just read that quotation from Obama, and you wanted to comment on it.
Well, you know, this is what we have typically heard, even under the Bush administration, about how we should interpret the need for enhanced surveillance authority for the government, that we need to agree to some sort of a balance between our privacy and our security, that we have to trade off freedom in order to be safe. And I think that we, the public, should question that frame. We shouldn't allow ourselves to be cornered into that belief. There is no evidence to suggest that we can't have our privacy and our security as well. We have some time-tested principles about how the government can execute these sorts of powers to surveil, to gather intelligence information that can be implemented to protect our privacy. And again, we're talking about judicial review of orders and warrants and subpoenas that the government has. Those can be done under exigent circumstances to affect a sort of a crisis situation and carry out an investigation that needs to happen right away. There are any number of ways that the government, we could change these existing laws so that they accommodate our privacy, our fundamental constitutional liberties, and still allow the federal government to carry out the investigations that it needs to do.
Well, and Rick, how does law enforcement respect that balance between security and privacy, just generally or specifically if you have an instance?
Well, I could speak, for instance, when I was in charge of the security detail at the legislature. You know, we wanted to keep the buildings open and free access without having to search everyone's purses and luggage and computer bags. So it puts the onus on us to be very diligent and watching, just learning how to watch people instead of suspecting everyone. You know, if you suspect everyone, then you know, you have to expect them to give up certain freedoms, just like the TSA. If you want to board a plane, you know, you all have to go through the search. So sometimes being too politically correct restricts everyone. So there's a price to pay. At least the government believes there's a price to pay for those freedoms.
Let's bring in a caller today. It's Doug from Albuquerque who has a question about how the NSA's information is being used. Good morning, Doug. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for having me on, and I really do appreciate this show. Peter, I think you've done an awesome job of explaining, what the implications are of the NSA's program. Specifically, my question is this. Obviously, the government has presented this as a battle against Islamic extremist terrorists, and that the information that they've gathered, although it is extensive, and I'm going to say overall reaching, because they pull in all of the information, basically they've been saying, well, you know, we're just using it to connect the dots, which I can understand. They probably look at the metadata and say, okay, who's talking to who? But obviously they can go back, and if they find something of interest, they can get deeper into it and say, okay, well, what did they say? I guess specifically, I'm wondering, you know, we take it at face value that, yes, this is a battle against Islamic extremists and, you know, foreign contacts and such. But I was wondering, Peter, if your organization had any indication that perhaps this data was being used beyond that. And specifically, I'm wondering about things like the Occupy Wall Street movement, or perhaps environmental groups that would have been working against the Keystone Pipeline, things of that nature. And specifically, the thing I want to, point at is, you know, this term of terrorism or terrorist can be very broad. We've heard of, you know, domestic terrorists, perhaps. I guess a terrorist could be anybody who doesn't agree with you. And that's kind of what I'm wondering about, is whether you had heard of anything, being done with data that would have gone beyond the scope of trying to battle Islamic extremists.
Doug, thanks for your call this morning. Peter, you'd like to comment?
Yeah, great questions. Thank you, Doug. The off the top of my head, I'm not aware that we have recently heard of instances where Patriot Act authorities have been used against local organizations that where it just concerned protected First Amendment activity. But we have a long history where the government has used surveillance powers to keep tabs on legitimate organizations that are carrying out advocacy activities here in the United States. You know, over the last several years, there have been the development of what they call fusion centers at the state level, where the federal government has facilitated the accumulation of all sorts of databases that that are gathered at the that are created at the state level and at the local level. And some of that activity has indeed resulted in local police, municipal and state police keeping tabs on environmental organizations. There's a huge case that the ACLU brought against the Denver police where they were collecting intelligence portfolios, dossiers on environmental organizations, protesters who would show up at particular demonstrations. There was a series of incidents early on during the Patriot Act days where the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Forces that Rick mentioned were gathering data on anti-war protesters, even to the degree of gathering it on church groups and church leaders. For what purpose? Well, we can only imagine that, just as you suggested, they were assuming that because people were protesting the government's activity, that they, at some level, fit the profile of a domestic terrorist.
You can go to our website, KUNM.org, to get our phone numbers, or you can go there to email us, like Mike did with a question. He asks, why is NSA surveillance more of an intrusion than private companies that seem to have less security protocols? And we've learned that Edward Snowden, who is the whistleblower on the run, worked for a private company. So anybody like to comment about that, the private company's involvement?
Well, I can certainly say that I think the question was, why are the implications any greater if the government's collecting that data than private corporations, as I heard you say it? And the reality is that, you know, there's plenty of negative implications from private corporations collecting that data. The problem when it comes to the government collecting that data is that ultimately what could be perfectly innocent activity could be viewed as suspicious by the government and reason to conduct some sort of a criminal investigation or terrorist investigation. And the damage that's caused by that investigation doesn't happen at the point that you're charged or indicted. It actually happens throughout the investigative phase, which can really wreak havoc in your life when you begin to have let the federal government into your life to root through your belongings, through your personal privacy, through the things, the activities that you carry out throughout the day. That's quite a disruption into your life and ultimately could have quite an effect on your reputation. So, you know, the implications of government carrying out this surveillance are pretty significant even compared to private corporations.
Let's shift gears a little bit by now. Joining us by phone from Ruidoso is State Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino. He's the chair of the State Senate Public Affairs Committee. Welcome, Senator.
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. And you today in the mountain air?
Oh, it's beautiful up here.
Excellent. Nice. So in this most recent state legislative session, you introduced Senate Bill 556, the full title of which is An Act Relating to Privacy, Enacting the Freedom from Unwarranted Surveillance Act, Providing Penalties. Can you tell us a bit about this proposed legislation, Senator?
Sure. The bill basically, it didn't get very far, but, it, you know, I think it raised the issue, and I would foresee that we would have further discussion in the future of this topic. But it would prohibit the use by any state agency or person within New Mexico of a drone or unmanned aircraft to gather information about criminal conduct. And so it would really basically deal with this issue that subsequently we now find out the FBI is already doing, that is using unmanned aircraft in certain situations to gather information that may be used in the prosecution of criminal activity.
Were you aware of these uses of drones or used by state law enforcement, or were you seeking to act proactively?
No, this was actually brought to me by a staff person at the legislature, and my first reaction was, "Oh, that's not likely to happen in New Mexico. Don't worry about that." And then the more we looked at it, and the more I thought about it, the more I felt, well, this probably is the next step in what's pretty rapidly becoming a widespread concern about governmental and private companies surveying us and monitoring our every action. So apparently California had a similar piece of legislation that they debated, and at the behest of a staff person at the legislature, I said, yeah, I'll be glad to carry that. And we had one hearing on it. It was a good hearing, and it never got beyond the next committee, but I would foresee that in the future this is going to be an increasingly debated topic.
Well, we're glad to have you in our conversation. We're going to go ahead and take another caller now because Bill from Los Lunas, who's patiently been holding on the line, has a question about a subject to which you can add, I'm sure, Senator, and he wants to know where's the privacy in new driver's licenses being issued? So, Bill, thanks for joining our conversation, and you have a question or a comment?
Yes, Kathleen, thank you. And to your guests, I would like for them all to answer this. The old driver's license had six identifiers of the individual. We now have a driver's license that has up to 26 identifiers. A police officer can park behind you at a street light and through technology, receive information from the back pocket of your individual person while you're sitting in that red light and draw all the information he needs. Now, how can this information can be abused when a police officer finds a woman attractive and he sees her and he gets this information that way just to get information because he's seen her quite attractive. The genie has been out of the bottle. It's difficult to put it back in, and I blame both government, private business, and law enforcement, and especially the citizens of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Peter, you'd like to comment. I see you shaking your head there.
Oh, sure. You know, I it's a great point. We here in New Mexico, as well as nationally, the ACLU have opposed the full implementation of the Real ID Act, which is a federal act that was passed through Congress without virtually any debate, that really tries to transform our driver's licenses into basically a national ID card. And I think some of the things that the caller is referring to are elements of the Real ID Act. For example, putting on our driver's licenses the capacity to store data that can be scanned by presumably the government, but in fact the Real ID Act didn't require that data to be fully encrypted, and so it could actually be accessible to private companies. It creates the opportunity for that national ID to be used as a sort of an internal passport to control what sectors of government the citizen has access to be able to profile those people on the basis of the data that's contained on that card. So that's a huge concern for us. Fortunately, here in New Mexico, we've staved off efforts, particularly by our governor, to fully implement the Real ID Act. In other, you know, there are some 20-odd states that have actually passed legislation formally prohibiting the implementation of the Real ID Act in those states largely because of privacy concerns.
We invite you to email your comments or questions to KUNM.org. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, are you willing to trade your privacy for security? How much privacy are you willing to give up? Rick Anglada, you wanted to talk about briefly about driver's licenses from a law enforcement perspective.
Yes, from a law enforcement perspective, as far as being able to properly identify someone, there is quite a burden on police officers because sometimes IDs and driver's licenses are so easy to attain that sometimes you really don't know a person's true identity, especially if they come from another country and they may have several IDs. In my experience, I've stopped people and arrested people under numerous false IDs. So that creates a big issue for law enforcement when you're trying to find out who this person really is. But then again, you know, how much freedom are we willing to give up? As far as the caller's concerns about police officers abusing their authority, you know, being a chief of police, and also in state police, I happen to work internal affairs investigations for a couple of years. So we're constantly trying to weed out the bad seeds in law enforcement. But, you know, we have to recruit from the human race. So there's always going to be bad elements infiltrating every
flawed agency. Flawed elements, right. at the least. Senator Ortiz-Pino, would you like to add to this discussion about driver's licenses and Real ID Act?
Well, I think the key element here is what Peter mentioned, that this was passed without debate. I mean, I'm really concerned because so many of these expansions of surveillance and governmental authority and intrusion are being done in an atmosphere of post 9/11 panic or paranoia, and it's so critical that these issues and all the consequences be really thoroughly debated, and they weren't. The Patriot Act wasn't. The Real ID Act wasn't. We're now finding out that we've given up freedoms that we thought we had kept, and I really think the crucial thing that Peter alluded to should be uppermost in our mind. That is, we really need to understand what we're doing before we take these drastic expansions of governmental authority.
Well, and just a couple of comments. I read a quotation from President Obama from early June. I don't know if you heard it, but he said, we're going to have to make some choices as a society. And maybe what sticks in people's craw is that we haven't been asked to make those choices. They've been imposed upon us. And the other thing I want to mention is just senators speaking up about the FBI drone surveillance, saying this is happening, but there's no policy in place. And that's what the director of the FBI said yesterday. Oh, we're working on some policies for use. And yet that's already happening. Peter, you want to comment on that at
well,
all?
Well, just, you know, policies are only so good as the administration that writes them. And the next administration that comes in may have a more liberal attitude about how those, those drones are used. Ultimately, if it's not legislation and it's not written into the law, the public really doesn't have much of a guarantee about how those kinds of surveillance tools are going to be used. So, you know, ultimately, I think there should be, and I fully support the Senator Ortiz Pino's bill that would have created some boundaries around the way that those drones are used and are going to be used. And let's acknowledge that those drones are coming to New Mexico. In fact, I believe that the APD and perhaps Rick, you know, APD is already contracting to use some of that drone technology here in Albuquerque. Certainly on the border, drones have been used for a long time, and their use is only expanding. And I have to add that I've had to look into this drone question a bit. That drone technology is growing quickly, and indeed, it seems like in the not-too-distant future we'll have a situation where drones can hover for long periods of time at an elevation that you can't see, and their camera technology is sophisticated enough that it can give you detailed information about what's happening from the air, on the ground, as I say, for long periods of time. And, that gives you the opportunity to track the movement of anybody in our city and in our state, and to try and determine if they're doing something that, you know, the police might want to look into, but also is that politically relevant activity? Is that activity that's going to reveal something intimate about that person? Is it activity that's protected under the First Amendment?
We're going to need to take a short break. When we return, though, we've had reports that the NSA surveillance programs have led to the stopping of terror attacks. And so we ask you listening out there, do the ends, the stopping of terror attacks, justify the means? We'll also see if our other panelists want to add any more about the drone issue. In the meantime, you can join our conversation, KUNM.org, and you can find all the phone numbers on there. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with you.
Established in 1929, UNM Press is a well-known and respected publisher in the fields of anthropology, archaeology, indigenous studies, Latin American history, American studies, Chicana and Chicano studies, art and architecture, and the history, literature, ecology, and cultures of the American West. For more information, please visit unmpress.com. A message from the tax-exempt University of New Mexico Press.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's critical issues.
The Republican Party is institutionally and demographically stronger than it's been in decades.
The next motion up for debate, the GOP must seize the center or die.
You take every rising group in America, the Republican Party is losing that group.
Seizing the new center is political death.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Good morning and welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about privacy issues. I'm joined by State Senator Jerry Ortiz Pino on the telephone. I'm joined by Rick Anglada. He is the former Taos Chief of Police and a state police lieutenant. And I'm joined by Peter Simonson, the executive director of the ACLU. As we left, we had a question for listeners about the ends justifying the mean, but we were talking about drones. And Rick, did you want to add anything about how state law enforcement or local law enforcement are using drones or perhaps may use them in the future?
Yeah, personally, I'm not aware of an agency, a police agency using drones, but Peter mentioned that APD may have begun using them, and I'm not aware of that, but I do know that they have been used along the borders. And there again, I don't agree with the use of drones either. I believe that people do have an expectation of privacy in their homes, what they're doing in their backyards. And as Peter mentioned, those drones can stay up for quite a length of time, and you know, who knows who they're watching and what they're watching. And, you know, I'm suspicious also of our government developing an enemies list. And that's one of the reasons that I really left law enforcement. I didn't like the direction that it was going. you know, I don't like the idea of a police state, so to speak.
Now, Senator Ortiz-Pino, in some of the analyses of your legislation, there was an argument that there was a constitutional doctrine called the plain view doctrine, and that helicopter surveillance and other surveillance was already doing what drones could do, and maybe we were just sort of creeped out by the unmanned aspect of it. How would you like to comment on that?
Well, yeah, that was the Attorney General's office that really put that forward, that we already have warrantless surveillance in the form of these speed SUVs that are parked alongside highways, or we have helicopters or manned aircraft that keep track of speeders, or at least we see the signs that say they do. I'm not sure they still are doing that, but for years that was our belief, that they were up there watching us. I think Peter made a really interesting point, and that is that a drone with its sophisticated equipment can be essentially invisible to us and still be recording everything that's going on. And there is, you know, creeped out may be the right phrase there, but it does seem that qualitatively that's a different thing than if you see a sign posted that say speed monitored by aircraft, and that advises you better slow down, or you see an SUV parked along the side of the road and you figure, oh, that might be the speed wagon. But on the other hand, to not even know it's up there and to somehow be being watched and have your every movement recorded and tracked, I think that does change it.
All right, Senator,
I'm not sure the plain view doctrine applies if you're not in plain view.
I understand. Let's go ahead and bring another caller who also has been waiting patiently. It's Bill from Albuquerque. Bill, you'd like to join our conversation today. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. You know, this whole question, of course, reeks of history, right? This is the same kind of thing that repressive regimes have done in the past, that for our own safety they're going to do these things. And it just occurs to me always that this wouldn't need to occur if the people were truly being served rather than being exploited. You know, we've got exploitation going on around the world, and thankfully for the Internet and these technologies, we become more aware of it, and we as citizens become less interested in it, hopefully. But we're also, as citizens, being exploited. This whole thing is going to continue to happen. And I want to ask the people on your panel their impression of the idea that certain kinds of sociopathology and leadership lead to a lack of concern for the people and an exploitation of them rather than a service to them. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call. Senator Ortiz-Pino, you're in leadership here in the state. You're the chair of the Senate Public Affairs Committee. How would you like to answer that question?
Well, I think Bill makes a really telling point with his comment there. The issue really is at what point, and Chief Anglada alluded to this as well, at what point do the police stop being the protectors of the public and become the enforcers of the powers that be against the public? And that's what underlies all of this debate, I think. At what point are our public servants truly our servants, and when do they become servants of some other mysterious entity that may not be named, but that's making decisions about our lives and is trying to control our behavior in ways that we may not feel is to our advantage.
And Rick, was that sort of what you were alluding to when you said that's why you decided to leave law enforcement?
Exactly. And as the caller mentioned, there's good and bad leadership in not only police agencies, but in politics, statewide, nationally, worldwide. And power does tend to corrupt a lot of people. And the need to remain and keep that power when they become addicted to the power, that leads to a lot of government overreach, I believe.
You know, I can't remember who said it, I saw a quotation while I was preparing about how one of the hardest things to give up for a president when they come in is a power that's already been granted, even if they disagree with it. Peter, you wanted to add on to what our last caller, Bill, was talking about at all?
Well, I think, one of the things I wanted to point to is that in this conversation, we're certainly critiquing the NSA program, these drone surveillance programs. But I want to make the point that That doesn't mean that we don't believe that law enforcement should have the tools necessary to protect us against terrorism or against crime. I think we all agree that we want to keep our country safe. We want to be safe in our own persons. I think all we're asking is that the government is transparent about how it uses this, these authorities, how it uses these powers, and that it proves to us that it actually needs to have some relaxed standards for how it's going to invade our privacy. It's, again, I just want to emphasize this point that it's not clear to us, it's not clear to the ACLU, that we have to sacrifice our freedom in order to be safe. There are time-tested principles, the requirement of a warrant, the requirement of judicial review, the requirement of notice that Senator Ortiz-Pino mentioned, individualized suspicion. These are the fundamental principles that keep our privacy intact but still allow law enforcement to get those powers that it needs to gather intelligence information and to protect us against terrorism or crime. The government has refused to answer that question, why it actually needs to be relieved of those traditional constitutional limits in order to protect us. You'll hear there's been recent debate, there's been recent revelations that about how these how this NSA program has allowed the government to stop several terrorist attacks or several terrorist plots. Great. Prove to us that you couldn't have done that without the existing laws that we had prior to the USA Patriot Act. Prove to the public, show to the public that you actually need to be relieved of those traditional constitutional protections that guarantee privacy while also allowing police to carry out their job.
Let's bring our next caller in. It's Andy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Andy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. The thing I wanted to mention is something that kind of bothered me in the coverage about all of this over the years is that, we all think that our data, all these databases are actually isolated from one another. And when the government gets things like our phone records, they're able to link databases to all of our different preference shopping cards and all sorts of records and all sorts of databases that are generally publicly available that wouldn't otherwise be linked. And that's more of a specific use of how metadata can be used and how it's not just metadata for how, you know, who you're calling and what and possibly what you're talking about, but it actually links to your shopping habits and everything else. That's basically my observation.
All right. Thank you so much for that observation. Let's bring in Glenn right away here from Hemis Springs. You had an interesting point you wanted to make, Glenn. Go right ahead.
Hi, yes. Celebrating my 26th anniversary of an acquittal at the Peace Center next August 10, and it made me think of how something happened during my trial 26 years ago. After I was acquitted, and thanks to ACLU assistance too, the immigration investigators went to the neighbors of all 12 jurors to see if I had somehow influenced them in this decision of my finally being acquitted. And Dimitri Martinez's attorney got wind of this, and Dimitri called me, and so I called my attorney. She called the Journal, and the day after my acquittal, the Journal has a heavy-duty editorial that I still have that said, INS, Immigration Naturalization Service, vendetta, and it stopped. And that just says to me what you are doing with this show, what Edward Snowden did, Bradley Manning, Julian Assange. We need to have the public be aware of what's being done secretly, and I really appreciate this show. Thanks, Jerry, and thanks to your guests. For letting us know what's going on.
Absolutely, Glenn, and thanks for calling. And I don't think we want to finish this show without talking about where we go from here. And, you know, now we've got Edward Snowden on the run who has revealed information. We have Bradley Manning on trial who also revealed information, brought things to light. So now we know more. And given the knowledge of that we now have that there are sort of secret senatorial kind of conclaves that know more than other senators. Where do we go from here? What do we do? Do we have a national conversation? Do we demand that state legislators
take on this issue in any ways they can, or federal Congress take things on? Peter, let's start with you, and we'll go right around the panel here.
I think you hinted exactly what needs to happen. We need to have congressional hearings, public congressional hearings, about the ways that the various Patriot Act and NSA wiretapping authorities are being used. We need an inspector general's investigation into the allegations that were made by Snowden. And I think we need for that investigation to go beyond just the use of Section 215, which is at the heart of a lot of what Snowden released. We need full and transparent information about PRISM. Even if we're not told exactly how that who that program is targeting, if it's targeting anyone or if it's just being broadly used as a fishing expedition, how is that generally being used? And then ultimately, I think out of those conversations, we need to see some reform of the Patriot Act and the NSA wiretapping, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, to ensure that there is actual effective judicial oversight about how these powers are being used and tailoring their use so that it is based on individualized suspicion and isn't allowed to be used as a fishing expedition to simply broadly see if any Americans are doing suspicious things.
Thank you, Peter. Rick Angelotta, where do we go from here?
Well, I think our states need to exercise a lot more power, and I'm I thank Senator Ortiz Pino for having the courage to try to pass such legislation against drones. But I think the public also really needs to pay attention and really know what's going on and seek other sources other than mainstream media, because they're probably not going to find out a whole lot from the mainstream media unless it's something dealing with Hollywood or otherwise. But they really need to pay attention and use their votes wisely to...
Thank you. Senator Ortiz Pino, I know there are interim committees meeting right now. What can the state legislature do in this arena?
Well, I mean, I think that the debate does have to be broader than just congressional hearings. And every time a state legislature or a city council, even for that matter, or an individual police chief or association of police chiefs, for example, says, we're not going to enforce the Real ID Act here, or we're not going to do such and such, or we're going to forbid this, that furthers the debate, I think. And that is exactly what in a democracy ought to be going on. We ought to be talking about these things in every possible arena. And if enough people say no, you know, people used to poo-poo city councils that would take positions on the war in Vietnam or in Iraq or wherever, state legislatures that would get involved in things that were beyond their purview. Well, that's part of public debate. And whenever any group gets together and says, we don't like that direction, that registers, and that starts having an impact. And ultimately, it turns things around. And I think that's exactly what we need to be doing as state legislators, talking about some of these issues, as well as budget and other crucial day-to-day things.
And there are memorials that can be passed in the Senate and the House,
exactly. or legislation like this ban on drone surveillance. Maybe that would be something to introduce again. It's going to be probably 2 years before we can introduce this particular bill again. But we'll keep trying to further this discussion and dialogue on this topic.
Well, and I was wondering if there was anything else that's on your plate in this arena or that's been percolating even as we're having this discussion today.
Well, you know, the other area that this starts creeping over into is the whole issue around healthcare and electronic health records and what might be done with that information and steps we need to take to make sure that those records aren't used for purposes that would be against the public good. We also need, I think, to take another look at that legislation we've discussed several times in the past, but that's been vetoed, that allows somebody to have their criminal records expunged if they haven't really been convicted.
Yes, that legislation that was sponsored in the state Senate, among other places. And I do apologize to people who are on hold. We had a number of calls we could not get today due to timing, but we certainly appreciate your desire to participate in our conversation. We'll be back next Thursday morning at 8 for a conversation about New Mexico seniors. A recent report found the state ranks 49th for food security among seniors. We'd like to hear from you next Thursday morning at 8. And today, thanks to our guests, former Taos Police Chief, New Mexico State Police Lieutenant Rick Anglada, New Mexico State Senator Jerry Ortiz-Pino, and Peter Simonson of the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico for making themselves available. Thank you all. Thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion. Thanks to our engineer, Roman Garcia, our assistant engineers, Marshall Broyles and Daniel Orban, and our assistant producers, Andy Lyman and Michael Hess. Michael Hess has also handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on your public radio station, KUNM Albuquerque.